minutes. So I may answer questions that are asked. I may allow for some comments, but for the sake of time, we may try to move through until I know that we're good on time so I can articulate my point. If you have any questions about the class, feel free to get with me. But for time's purposes, we may not have a lot of commenting until I can get through some of this material so that I can make my points, and then if there are any questions based on those points, then good. But we're going to discuss divorce and reconciliation. Specifically, do we have a responsibility, if we've divorced a spouse for the cause of adultery, to reconcile with them? And that was a question that if I understood the question, I want to deal with some of what our responsibility is to one who has been divorced. And so we don't have a lesson this morning. I'm just going to go through some verses and make some points, hopefully draw a diagram. It never works out, but we'll see. And we'll discuss this morning. But before we begin, I'd ask if you bow with me as we have a word of prayer. Okay, so again, do we have a responsibility to reconcile with a spouse that we've divorced from for scriptural reasons? I want to start with this idea of divorce. So I'm going to spend probably, hopefully, 15, 20 minutes on discussing what we mean by divorce, how our marriage relationship is set up, discussing that so then we can make application to our situations. So if you would open to Matthew 5, verses 31, 32. Matthew 5, starting in verse 31. So we want to look at what it means to be divorced, or what is divorce? How does that happen? What is the act of divorce? So verse 31, it says, "It was said, whoever sends his wife away, let him give her a certificate of divorce. But I say to you that everyone who divorces his wife except for the reason of unchastity makes her commit adultery, and whoever marries a divorced woman commits adultery." How would you define divorce in this context? Using the context. He sends her away. It says, verse 31, whoever sends his wife away, let him give her a certificate of divorce. Okay, it means he's divorcing her. He's just giving her paperwork to show that she has been divorced. That is the way Moses had set it up in the old law. This idea of divorce, this word divorce here, you can see in, if you look at other versions, so the word divorced, if you look at the American Standard Version, it says putteth away. The King James Version and the Young's Literal Translation says put away. So this idea of divorce, it's to send away, to put away. Is that a one-way street or a two-way street? Did they agree to do that, or did one person do that? One person, okay? Let's look over at Matthew chapter 19 for a second. Matthew 19, I'm going to start in verse 9. I'll read verse 9. It says to you, "And I say to you, whoever divorces his wife except for immorality and marries another woman commits adultery." Does anybody have a footnote for that word divorce in verse 9? Sends away. All right. Again, translations, if you look at the different translations, that word divorce is divorce in the ESV, NIV and New King James, along with the New American Standard 95 edition. But it's translated put away in the American Standard Version, Young's Literal Translation and the King James Version. Again, send away, put away. This idea of synonymous with divorce. Look over at 1 Corinthians. 1 Corinthians 7. Corinthians 7, so we've just studied this, so this is something that I brought up in that context, but we're going to look at verses 10 through about 15. It says in verse 10, "But to the married I give instruction, not I but the Lord, that the wife should not leave her husband. But if she does leave, she must remain unmarried." So if we stop right there, it says, The wife should not leave her husband at the end of verse 10. But if she does leave, she must remain unmarried. What inference can you draw from that? She did choose to leave, and then is still divorced. So there's two things you can infer there: that she chose to leave. So she chose. We just talked about sending somebody away, putting somebody away, but she chose to leave. Okay, and it's synonymous with divorce, to remain unmarried. But you can go on in that context, and it says, or else be reconciled to her husband, and the husband should not divorce his wife. Verse 12, but to the rest I say, not the Lord, that if any brother has a wife who is an unbeliever and she consents to live with him, he must not divorce her. Verse 13, and a woman who has an unbelieving husband and he consents to live with her, she must not send her husband away. Again, this idea of sending away, you go down to verse 15, it talks about leaving. So verse 15, we just saw that in verse 10. Verse 15, yet if the unbelieving one leaves, let him leave. All these things are synonymous with divorce. So we've got put away, send away, we've got leave. We talk about it being unmarried. What would you categorize all this when it comes to divorce? What are you doing or what is being done to you? Separating. I've heard this before, and so I'm going to use that. You're severing the relationship. All right, so divorce in and of itself, if you want to define it based on the verses that I've seen, and if you've got a different definition, please let me know. But everything that I see is divorce is synonymous with severing that relationship. Flip over to Romans chapter 7 for a sec. Romans chapter 7, verse 1, it says, or do you not know, brethren, for I am speaking to those who know the law, that the law has jurisdiction over a person as long as he lives. For the married woman is bound by law to her husband while he is living. But if her husband dies, she is released from the law concerning the husband. So then, if her husband is living, she is joined, and if the husband is living, she is joined to another man, she should be called an adulteress. But if her husband dies, she is free from the law, so that she is not not an adulteress, though she is joined to another man. Okay, so now we see another concept here. We've defined divorce as severance of a relationship, but now what do we see in this context? Okay, she's free from adultery, but is the relationship severed? If the husband isn't died. No, okay, let me back up. verse 2. For the married woman is bound by law to her husband while he is living. So, is there a relationship there? Yes. If she's bound, there is bondage one to another. Relationship is probably not a good word to use. Yes. And I'm going to get to that in just a sec. This is what I talked to you about earlier. I'm using the correct words. There doesn't have to be a relationship there, but there is still responsibility. There's still obligation. That's a better word for it. There's still obligation. And so I want to take a second to draw what nobody seems to be able to draw, and I'm not going to be able to either, a diagram that might help us to understand something. So you've got a husband. Can y'all see that in blue? Okay. I got yellow too. You've got a husband. And you've got a wife. Let the record show, marriage is to be between a husband and a wife. All right, this is the concept that's laid out in Genesis chapter 2. So you can have an unlawful marriage, but this concept doesn't work with a male and a male and a female and a female from the standpoints of the confines of what God has established as marriage. But marriage is between a husband and wife. We're going to deal with it in that way. All right, when you get married, you make a covenant one to another. I need my notes for this. Yes? No. Yes, you make a covenant to one another. All right, when two people, man and woman, get married, they enter into a covenant with each other. But they also enter into a covenant with God. All right? Because He is the author, creator, and authority of this relationship. So I'm going to represent this covenant that you enter into God this way. Because though It is a covenant with God. It is in relationship, or it is about the spouse. So you enter into a covenant with God to abide by the rules and regulations of the relationship, of the institution of marriage that He has established. So God governs that relationship. And when I make that covenant, I agree to fulfill, when I make the covenant to my wife, I agree to fulfill my duties and responsibilities to my spouse. That is my covenant to them. And I also understand that my entering into this relationship, I make a covenant with God, which requires placing myself under bondage to my spouse. All right, so that's what Romans chapter 7 is talking about. So I'm making a covenant to my wife when I get married, but as I'm entering into this relationship of marriage, that institution is governed by God. And God, based on 1 Corinthians 7 and based on Romans chapter 7, it shows that you are bound to that spouse when you get married. All right, so we're going to show it this way. My covenant is with God, but it is me being bound or under bondage to that person that I'm marrying. All right, when you make this covenant, yeah, she is making a covenant with God by entering into that relationship that she is going to enter into bondage to that husband. She is bound to that husband. When that husband makes the covenant with that wife, he is also, because he's entering into the relationship of marriage that is governed by God. That is an institution that is instituted and governed by God. He is bound. He's being bound to the wife. So you're entering into a covenant to agree to the terms of that institution. God, and terminology here, I don't want to get off into how we can use this other terminology, but it's a basic concept of, I have a covenant here between the two of us, but I'm also entering into an institution that is governed by God, instituted, and He has authority over it. And when I'm married, I become bound to that person that I'm marrying. And I am being bound to them. They are being bound to me. Okay, it's their commitment. It's my commitment, or it's my agreement. Okay, I am bound to them. They are bound to me, as that is God's law. That's what Romans chapter 7 says. I can sever my relationship and break my covenant to my spouse. I can sever this. I'm not talking about lawful or unlawful. Can I divorce my spouse? Yes, I can sever a relationship. We're not talking about whether it's lawful or unlawful. I can renege on my covenant, or I can lawfully, but I can sever that relationship. But does that allow me to be released or freed from my bondage to that spouse in the institution of God? I can't break that covenant with God, as He is the authority over that relationship. So when I sever this relationship here, I'm not under the control of being able to sever that relationship as far as bondage goes, because God is the author and creator of that relationship. He has given us, in Romans chapter 7, a way to sever that relationship, released from that bondage. What is that in Romans chapter 7? How can I be released from that?
Death.
Okay. As far as I know, there's only one other way that I can be released from that bondage. What is the other way that I can be released? For adultery. So I can sever that relationship for adultery and it be lawful, because that is what God has allowed for in Matthew 7 and Matthew 19. So I'm married. Let me see here. I get in trouble for getting ahead of my notes, so hold on. Yeah, so only by His allowances can I be released or freed from bondage. So I want to look at, how about Matthew chapter 5? Okay, so Matthew chapter 5. We've got a husband and wife who are married. I'm going to bring my Bible up here too while I'm drawing on this stuff. Somebody read Matthew chapter 5, verse 32. Okay, so if a husband severs his wife for a reason other than adultery, Is he still bound to that spouse? Yes. Okay. And if he's still bound to that spouse and she goes over here and finds another husband and marries him, she is still under bondage to the first husband. So what is he causing to do to her? And she is committing adultery. He's causing it, and she is committing adultery because she is under bondage to the first husband. All right? Now, let's say we've got this relationship again, and he divorces her for the cause of adultery. So now he can sever the relationship, and this goes either way. She can do the same thing. One person, only one person is needed to sever that relationship. But let's say he puts her way for the cause of adultery. Which line can we get rid of? His commitment to her, right here. Because that is the allowance that God has given for being released from bondage. So, he goes and gets married to another woman. All right? She's bound to him. Can he be bound to her? Yes, because he's released. She goes and gets married to another man. Can she be bound to him? Nope, because she's already still bound to her previous husband. She is not released from that bondage. That makes sense? What is the implication of that for the one who has committed adultery? They're stuck, essentially. Unless the husband dies, she is going to be under bondage to this one who has divorced her for the cause of adultery. And does that make sense? Or she dies, or they reconcile, as far as I understand. Does that make sense? Yes, Craig. That under the old law. We'll leave that alone for now. I don't want to get into that. There's questions about being joined to another man, and then once he's died, she's released, and so now is she bound to the new man? There's a whole, but for our sakes, we're just going to stick with this time. Okay, but no, I can get with you on that later as to my thoughts on it. Okay, so does that make sense to y'all? All right, then let's look at Matthew chapter 19. Now, I'm not saying there's not flaws to this diagram. This is how I chose to represent it, so I don't want that to be a distraction. But I think this is an easy enough visual for that. So Matthew chapter 19. Okay, I'm going to start back in verse 4. No, verse 3. Some Pharisees came to Jesus, testing him and asking, "Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any reason at all?" And he answered and said to them, "Have you not read that he who creates them from the beginning made them male and female? And for this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh." All right. Who allowed for the divorce of the spouses? Moses. Okay, so Moses is the one who allowed for divorce. What is Jesus' appeal to when he talks about marriage? He appeals to the beginning. Okay. By implication, I would say he is saying in verse 5 and 6 that for this reason, a man should leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two should become one flesh. So there are no longer two but one flesh, and what therefore has God has joined together, let no man separate. So he's saying, you're not to separate, right? Okay? He appeals. They asked if it was lawful. He is appealing to the law. But Genesis 2 is before Moses. So what does he mean by law? The law of God. We oftentimes need to make sure we define what law is talking about. It can be talking about the law of Moses, but it is understood that this is the law of God. It goes back to Genesis 2 before the law of Moses was instituted. Is there anything else that you can think of that goes back to the law of God, just off the top of your head, that was instituted or that you know about before Moses came along? There's more than one, but there's one I had in mind. Honor your father and mother. Okay, that's not the one I'm looking for. You see the examples of that. How about murder? There's Here's, okay, murder. There's my notes. Genesis chapter 9, it talks about that, where after Noah gets off the ark, he tells him not to shed another man's blood, or his will be shed. Look over at Matthew, Genesis chapter 9. I'm going to read that so I don't butcher it. Yes, but it's clear to see in verse 9, chapter 9. I agree that I think it goes back further than that, but this is a clear way of showing it as God's law established before Moses. So no, you're not wrong in that. In chapter 9 of Genesis, starting in verse 6, whoever shed a man's blood, by man his blood shall be shed, for in the image of God he made man. All right, so there is retribution, there is punishment for the one who sheds man's blood. That is a law of God not to kill, to murder. All right, that goes back to before Moses. So if there was ever a question about, well, that's a law by Moses, no, this goes back even further than that. Because they may say, well, we're not under the law of Moses anymore. The law that's being referenced in Romans 7 is God's law. Well, in Matthew 19, he's referenced in Genesis. Okay, the law of God, and when it comes to marriage, was instituted back in Genesis 2. So I would say that, yes, Matthew 19 and by extension Romans chapter 7 is referencing the law of God, not the law of Moses, because it goes back that far based on Matthew 19. Yes. I'm going to let Jesus say that. I'm going to let Jesus give you an answer. Give me a second. Matthew 19. I'll go back to Matthew 19. Okay, Matthew 19, verse 7. He says, they said to him, why then did Moses command to give her a certificate of divorce and send her away? He said to them, because of your hardness of heart, Moses permitted you to divorce your wives, but from the beginning it was not been this way. And I say to you that whoever divorces his wife except for immorality and marries another woman commits adultery. So Moses allowed for it. Why God had Moses, or why Moses allowed it. You know, Moses is a prophet of God. Why they did it, I can't give you an answer to that. And I'm not saying they're sinning because it was in the law of Moses. But it was not that way from the beginning. And so Jesus here expresses that it's not the way that it was from the beginning. And so this is how we should do it. Make sense, Brandon? I can't necessarily give you a why. I understand, and I can't give you the reason why. He allowed it. Moses allowed it to happen. Okay, and that's another day. I can't tell you why he allowed it, but I know that Jesus appeals back to Genesis 2 to say, but that's not the way it was from the beginning. So for us today, the law that we're under is the law of God, in which we should not divorce for any reason. It's unlawful otherwise. Yes, Christina. Now, that's all under the old law, correct?
Yes.
Okay. I understand. I just want to make sure we're not making inference to the new law and the law we're under now because of what Matthew 19 says. So that's a good answer to Brandon's question. I don't want to make application to us today because of what Jesus says in Matthew 19. So it is not okay for us, and that is what he's saying. So again, Brandon, I'm going to give you I don't know. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. There's a lot of reasons why, but that we don't know. But OK, so moving on. So 1 Corinthians chapter 7, then. There are several relationships in 1 Corinthians 7, so we're going to look at these real quick. Sorry. OK, so verse 10. But to the married I give instruction, not I, but the Lord, that the wife should not leave her husband. But if she does leave, she must remain unmarried or else be reconciled to her husband, and that the husband should not divorce his wife. Okay, so in this context, the wife leaves the husband, so she severs the relationship. Okay? Is it a lawful or unlawful marriage? Unlawful divorce, excuse me. Is it a lawful or unlawful divorce? Unlawful. By God's law, they're still under bondage to each other, and the divorce was not for the cause of adultery. There was no death involved, so it is an unlawful divorce. Now, is he talking to, in this passage, is he talking to an unbeliever, or is he talking to a believer? Believers. You see down in 12 through 16, it's talking to the unbeliever, but this context, I would suggest, as we've discussed before, is dealing with issues specific to the Corinthian brethren. This woman left her husband, and now what is she to do now that she's penitent? What is she to do? And so he gives her two options. What are her two options? Okay, so she is to... Yeah, so she is to remain unmarried, or she is to reconcile. Okay. Now, she does have a third option that is not a good one. She can marry somebody else, but she's in sin, and so that's not really what we're discussing. We're talking about somebody who's penitent. Okay, if someone is penitent, let's see. If someone is truly penitent and of leaving their spouse, then what might be one reason why Paul would instruct them to remain instead of to reconcile? They have two options. He says she must remain unmarried or reconcile to her husband. Why wouldn't he just counsel you need to be reconciled to your husband? Yes, Christina. There you go. And that's exactly my point. This is a covenant between two people. She can't just force them to reconcile. She has put them both into a situation where they have to agree to reconcile. So the idea is you can remain unmarried or be reconciled. So reconcile or you shall remain unmarried. That's the only way that she can live her life. She may be penitent, but she is still under bondage to her husband. Her husband is still under bondage to his wife. All right. She's the one that sinned. Okay, so she needs to be penitent. What is his situation? Sorry, didn't hear. Okay, well, no. This is just talking about her and Roman and 1 Corinthians 7:10. So the specific situation, she left him not for adultery. So that's what I'm going to deal with there. So then, what's his situation if she left him for any reason other than adultery? He's in the same situation. She put him in that situation, but he's in the same situation. He's still under bondage to his wife, just like she's still under bondage to his husband. He didn't sin, she did. Now, she can still be forgiven of that sin if she's truly penitent. But he is still under bondage to her just the same. So their options in this situation is they can either be reconciled or they can remain unmarried. They should remain unmarried. I think that's the way she must. He says she must remain unmarried. And the same for him. If he were to go and marry somebody else, what's going on there? Adultery. Because though she divorced him, he's still in a situation where he's still bound to her. So he goes and marries somebody else, then he commits adultery. You know, that's the same thing over here. So a lot of days you see where a spouse will run off. We're just keep picking on the women. But, you know, wife decides she's going to run off and marry another man. I'm just tired of that relationship. I'm going to go marry another man. She severs the relationship. She leaves. All right. Okay. Well, now I put the wrong indicator. All right. What's with him? He's stuck. It's an unfortunate situation, but I don't see any other way around it. He's still under bondage to that wife. She chose to sever the relationship. Yes, Brandon.
Okay. So, like the semantic part of all
this. Sure.
What the bond is. So, when the wife left.
Yes.
God said, "You can be reconciled to her husband." So, that bond to God is still there. God still considers
her bound to him and him bound to her. Yes, sir. No, not her husband. The relationship has been severed. He's still under bondage to.
Not the relationship, but not the bond, not God's bond.
The relation, the okay, husband is put for the one you're under bondage for. Not if we defined marriage and divorce. I didn't define marriage, and somebody else might be able to do a better job of this. Yeah, it's a reference to the person, but they are not married. We just saw that they severed the relationship, so they're no longer so. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Brandon.
The personal side of it, but there's still
bondage. Yes, sir.
So, when he says that she can be reconciled to her husband, even though there's no marriage there, is it still considered a marriage by God's terms because they are still bound together?
Say that again.
That's semantics.
Say that. They are still bound together, but there is no marriage. So you enter. So if I understand it right, so she severs their relationship. He is husband in the past tense. So I think about Joseph and Mary, where Joseph is called Mary's husband, but while they're just betrothed, they're not married. Okay, they're husband in the past tense, and I'm sure there's a figure of speech for that. But I think you get it. Their relationship has been severed. So the way God views it is, they are no longer in the husband-wife relationship, but when you entered into that covenant to God of marriage, he is the author of that institution. You entered into bondage to that person, and so you are still bound to them, though there is no obligation anymore to the physical or responsibilities or duties. Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir. They didn't sever the relationship for the cause of adultery. Two different covenants. Give me a second. Did you have your hand raised? Hold on, I'm gonna go up here. We're getting there. I think that's the idea. Yes, sir.
Everybody open the Bible, Romans 7.
Romans 7. Yes, it means
not free. How do I know that? 1 Corinthians 7:4. Same writer, bound, but if her husband's dead, free. It's not obligation, it's not a relationship that continues. It's obligation. That's the first thing. Secondly, bound to. We think of bound to like you bind two people together with a rope, that is not the
All right, did that make more sense? Because I'm trying to express that, and I don't know if I'm doing a very good job of it. So did that make more sense, Brandon? And if not, we can talk about it later because I got to keep going. Okay. All right, so we'll talk more about that in a second. So that we can get to, and this is what I mentioned earlier, so I'm thankful you are being a gracious audience. We want to get to the idea of, okay, let me erase all this. We're back to the covenant between a husband and wife. They're now married and they're now bound to one another under God's law. Okay, if the husband, we'll put it on the husband this time, if he cheats and the wife divorces him for the cause of adultery, all right, she is no longer under bondage to him. Agreed? Okay, he is still under or bound to her, correct? For our purposes, we're going to say yes. Okay, so does God allow for reconciliation of those who are divorced? Yes, ma'am. No, I'm sorry. He does allow. Okay, I'm asking that question. Does God allow for reconciliation between two people who are divorced? Yes, he does. Okay, that reconciliation could be two that are unlawfully divorced. That reconciliation could be for those who are lawfully divorced. And what I mean by that, lawfully divorced, is she put him away. He is still bound to her. That doesn't mean she cannot reconcile to him. That does not mean she cannot reconcile with him. That's a better way to put it. Okay. At this moment in time, she is free from him. What is her obligation to him at this point? None. Now, if he's a Christian and she's a Christian, what obligation does she have to him? Neighbor and? Brother or sister in Christ. Okay, she has, and I want to make that clear, this part of it. She has no other obligation to him. Okay? Now, the question might be asked, would it be wrong not to reconcile with one who has committed adultery? Because by not reconciling, you're going to cause them to burn with passion. Satan may tempt them. You may cause them to commit adultery, which if we've already covered that. You're not causing them to commit adultery because you're not bound to them anymore. And theirs is the bondage that is, they're the one who is under bondage. If they commit adultery, it's because of their act. Okay. Shouldn't I forgive just like God forgave me? Ephesians chapter 4. So those are some reasons as to why people would suggest maybe isn't it wrong not to reconcile? Yes, Jamie. Hold on, Alex, and hold on, Christina. I'm going to get through this. We got 5 minutes, and then I'll open it up because I think some of the application or extensions y'all make will be the ones that I make. Okay, so dealing with the idea of if the woman is lawfully divorced from her husband, is she causing him to commit adultery?
No.
Or is he responsible for his own situation? She's free. She has been released. She is not under bondage. She is not causing him to commit adultery. Is he capable of controlling himself? If she divorces her husband for the cause of adultery, she is not under bondage to him anymore. She has been released from that bondage because she divorced for the cause of adultery. Okay, that being the case, is she causing him to commit adultery? The cause of adultery.
They've already committed adultery, therefore.
So we're saying the same thing. She's not causing him to commit adultery. He's already done it. Well, and any further action is on him. She's not bound to him anymore. Okay, it's his choice. What I'm getting at is it's his choice. He's already an adulterer. It's his choice. She's not causing him to commit it because she's no longer bound to him. It's his actions, his choice that put them in that situation. Okay? 1 Corinthians 7. as a part of the consequences of the woman's actions, so the divorced woman has the option to reconcile or she must remain. So if the husband doesn't want to reconcile, 1 Corinthians 7, 10 and 11, she must remain. And that's what has to happen. Okay, so
if there's no
lawful, and what I'm getting at is in that situation, Paul told her to either reconcile, that's for unlawful divorce, or she told her to remain, which implies that she has the self-control to. Okay, she may not have a choice to reconcile, so she has the self-control. That's what I'm getting to. Ephesians 4:32 talks about forgiveness. Okay, God requires repentance before forgiveness. So do I have to forgive that one who has committed adultery? Only if they're penitent. But does that forgiveness absolve the consequences of their actions? And I think this is kind of what it boils down to. Okay, I must forgive someone who is penitent. Okay, but does that, in this situation, it's not necessarily for me to come to the rescue, to reconcile with that person for the fact that they're in their situation and there are consequences to your actions. And I think of David and Bathsheba and Uriah. David had Uriah killed. He took Bathsheba. They committed adultery. Okay. And the consequences of that was the sword was never going to leave the house of David and the baby was going to die. Okay. And so is it my responsibility, and maybe this is the intent, is my responsibility to remove the consequences from that other person? Or is my duty, based on my relationship to them at this point, just to be a brother and sister in Christ and to be a neighbor to them? I have no responsibility, no requirement to free them from their consequences of their actions, and that's what I'm getting at. Yes, ma'am. What did God allow for? No. That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying you can't reconcile. But what I am saying is it was God's law that we're under. God said the only reason for you to divorce lawfully is for the cause of adultery. Then why wouldn't he counsel you to stay married? That's what I'm saying. He allows for it. So what do we have the authority to do? Just because I forgive doesn't mean I have to reconcile.
I understand that. I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is, if you look at the underlying matter, it's the matter of your
heart saying, I forgive them, but I'm not going to trust them anymore. I can separate the relationship. So then we're kind of throwing out 1 Corinthians chapter 13, where it talks about the law of love. Okay, so give me a second. I'm going to read something I wrote before that, for this reason. And so we're running out of time. Michael's back there ready to buzz me. Okay. The marriage relationship is built on caring love. And this is going to go back to what Jamie's talking about. Okay, that love I'm referencing is caring love, is neighbor love. Loving someone as yourself. Showing value or esteem for a person. More than that, it's built on trust and respect. Ephesians 5:22-33 talks about what Jamie's talking about. Being submissive to your husband. Husbands loving your wives also as Christ loved the church. Okay, wives are to be submissive, be in submission to their husbands and show respect. Husbands are to love their wives as their own bodies. Nourish, cherish with a sacrificial love, as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for her. It's a possessive relationship. Proverbs 5:15-20 talks about you drink from your own cistern. You let them be yours alone, not for strangers. You let your fountain be blessed. Let her breast satisfy. It goes on, not to a stranger, you know, not to a foreigner, not to a harlot. Marriage is a deeply personal, intimate relationship. When cheated on, you are made to feel worthless, betrayed, degraded, unloved, unvalued, inadequate. You may forgive the person if they repent, but you're never going to be able to build that type of relationship back up, nor is it your responsibility to.
That's not true. Because at the end you said you can never.
You may never be able to. You may, that's what I said, that you may never. I'm not saying you shouldn't reconcile. I'm not saying you should. I'm saying God gives us the authority to divorce for adultery. And I'm also saying that you have the right not to reconcile or feel guilty about that option. Okay? That is not your obligation to forgive them of their consequences.
So originally when all this was presented, it sounded to me like that you were recommending or you were saying that it's okay, and now you're saying it's either or.
I'll clarify this because, again, words get me in talking, and I talk fast sometimes. Okay. In this situation, you have the option not to reconcile and not to feel guilty for it, because the person who has committed the adultery and been divorced for the cause of adultery, they made their bed, now they got to lay in it. You have the option to reconcile to them. Okay? That is your choice whether you do, as the spouse who is divorced for the cause of adultery. I'm presenting options. Yes, ma'am.
So then, which one would God want us to choose?
God gave us both. Yeah. So I can't speak to what God would want you or not you to. And he also said you could divorce him for adultery. No. We're going to be done in a sec because Michael's about to buzz me out. We are. Okay, so I'm going to leave it there. But God gave us the option. And so you can't reconcile. We just show the options to the people. They make their choice. Okay, Michael, go ahead.
Well,